Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What extra hurdles do some Latino students face in their journey to finish high school and move on to college? These students are part of the fastest-growing ethnic group in America, and as such, they will be a critical part of our future success. But one in three Latino and Latina students do not graduate from high school on time, and many are at risk for dropping out. My guest today wanted to understand why and to share the stories of some who have prevailed over significant challenges to go on to college. Filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz does just that in his new independent lens documentary, The Graduates, Los Graduados. It will air in two parts on KERA Channel 13 television this coming Monday, October 28th, and the following Monday, November 4th, both nights at 9 o'clock. Bernardo Ruiz joins us today as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. Bernardo, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much for having me. It's I'm excited to talk to you.
So given the growth of the Latino population in America, this film is a reminder that this issue is one we need to care about, not simply for the sake of the individuals, but for the sake of the country's future in general. How did that idea become clear to you?
You know, I think that one of the things that we see in the series is how the demographic shift that's happened in the country is really playing out in our nation's schools. We know that one out of every four public school students nationwide is Hispanic or Latino. And for the purposes of the series and this conversation, I use those terms interchangeably. So, you know, just by sheer force of the numbers alone, the quality type of education that these students have will shape a significant part of the country's future. So what I and my team really wanted to examine was what are the obstacles, what are the set of obstacles facing this group of students, and then what are the areas where we're actually seeing some success, where are we actually seeing some forward movement?
I was interested that you divided, it's a two-part documentary, but you divided it up into young women and young men. Talk about what they have in common as students and then about some of the issues that sort of affect them separately.
You know, one of the things that we see across the board is, and this isn't just Latino students, it's students of color in general, but it's the economic context that many students are living in. We're seeing stories of inequality, income inequality, stories of where resources are lacking, and sometimes in very profound ways. So I think that the economic reality is certainly a through line through both hours, through both sets of stories. In the case of young women, one of the themes that emerged really organically in the interviews was the added responsibility or extra pressure put on young women to take care of younger siblings, take care of the household, and to focus less on academic pursuits and more on the home. There are many young women in the series who push back on that, kind of overcome that pressure. But it was certainly a theme running through all of their stories. In the case of young men, it's as Pedro Noguera, the NYU sociologist who we interview in the film, says, it's the pull of the streets. In many neighborhoods, many communities across the country, many young Latino men are feeling that pull of the streets. We actually have one story in San Diego about a young man, Eduardo Corona, who was involved in gang activity, was not looking forward to a bright future in many ways, and was even at one point facing a six-year sentence. What got him through the crucible there was an organization called Reality Changers that takes a comprehensive, kind of holistic approach to education and college prep. Their goal is to create first-generation college students. And Eduardo was one of the first students to go through that program successfully. Today, he's serving as a mentor working with Latino youth, many of whom are in situations just like he was. So, you know, there are certainly differences in the stories between the 2 hours. But going back to that kind of first point, the economic reality of many young people in this country is that it's a turbulent economic times, and many young people have to work just to get by. Oftentimes, that really is fitting with their studies.
Eduardo's story really is interesting, and I was struck by the fact that he tells you that at one point in his life, when he was, I guess, a preteen, he literally did not know anyone who had ever graduated from high school.
It is one of those kind of impactful stories that he tells. He's a really wonderful storyteller. One of the other points that I really appreciated when I interviewed him was the story about how he had never smiled. When he first joined the Reality Changers program, Christopher Yanov, who's the founder of the project, a young man who actually started the program after winning on Wheel of Fortune, he took those savings and invested it in this innovative college prep program. But when Christopher Yanov was taking a photograph of Eduardo for his ID, he just couldn't get a smile out of him. So at the time, Chris Yanov had to use an entire roll of film just to get young Eduardo to smile. You know, I think part of what the work that Christopher does through Reality Changers is to reframe the context that students are operating in. It's really about goal setting and changing influences. So just like you said, if you're living in a context where no one has gone to college, when there isn't any higher education, there isn't a culture of higher education around you, how do you reframe that context for a student? How do you place them in an environment where many people are going to college, and that's normalized, where that reality is normalized?
One thing that came up in both parts of the film is that there are advocates who worry that Latino and Latina students are somehow made to feel unwelcome in schools. Is this a bigger problem in places where they are more a minority of the overall population? I'm thinking about a place like Texas, where very often public school systems in the cities are majority Latino.
You know, one of the stories in the film takes place in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And in that story, a young student, Gustavo, who's grown up in the little town of Griffin, which is just south of Atlanta, is a classic high achiever, someone who's really driven academically, absolutely filled with potential. But because of his immigration status, he feels hopeless at one point. In fact, Georgia currently has a ban on undocumented students at the 5 top research universities in the state. A student like Gustavo was not eligible to attend those institutions. And so Gustavo thought about dropping out, going right to work and not fulfilling this academic dream, until Northeastern University offered him a full ride based on his academic merit alone. And Gustavo is now entering his second year of university in the Northeast, studying, full-time. So, you know, that in an environment like that, Gustavo is certainly being told legally and directly that he was not welcome.
His story is so interesting when he recounts the fact that he moved to this country, crossed sort of quite dramatically with his parents across the desert, ended up in Georgia. He spoke hardly any English when he got to school, and the first full sentence he remembers speaking to a teacher was to ask for more English vocabulary words.
Yeah, it was a really wonderful moment in the interview where he says, my first sentence was "more words, please." Hmm. And I think that his story is emblematic of the stories of many young people. He's certainly not every story. The Latino community is very diverse, ethnically, economically, geographically. We can't say that any one story is emblematic of, of all of the stories. But his story definitely gets at one of the aspects of the Latino reality when it comes to youth, and that is students who are, for a first generation, entering into achieving success academically. And I think one of the things that we see in the series is these are the students who potentially represent future political and economic leadership in the country. And we really should pay attention to this group of students for a number of reasons, but I think it is inevitable that that some of these students will help shape our political future.
It's another interesting fact is that there are some, first of all, I want to step back here and point out the fact that the majority of Latino students in this country are here legally, and a great percentage of them were born in the United States. So for people who think that every, you know, Latino kid in the U.S. is illegal, that of course is incorrect. But there are families in which one, you know, a couple of kids are here illegally and a couple of kids were born here. That's got to be a really challenging thing to sort of negotiate even within one's own family.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for pointing that out. That's absolutely correct. That the majority of Latino Latino students are citizens, and it's a small percentage, but a significant percentage of students who are working to change their immigration status. One thing that's interesting, and that we see in the film as well, is that now this is the undocumented students who are known as the Dreamers, who have been so active politically. Have really become engaged in civil rights causes, not just around their immigration status, but around community building overall. And so I think that for all of the resistance that's been put up against this group of students, we're really seeing the growth of a political movement. The very blocks that have been set up have had the kind of ironic effect of creating a stronger and more politically committed group of students.
The DREAM Act, of course, was defeated on a federal level. But can you explain for people who sort of heard of it but don't understand exactly what the proposal was?
Sure. The DREAM Act would provide temporary. The DREAM Act itself would provide a path to citizenship for students who'd either served military service or are in 2 years of military service and 2 years of college. I don't know if I'm getting that right. In the 2 years of college. But it's emblematic of a broader immigration struggle. And one of the things that we see in the film is Gustavo's talking really and pushing for comprehensive immigration reform. He's discussing not just immigration reform and a path to citizenship for students like himself, but for his parents as well.
Yeah, there are a number of students in different parts of the country that show up in the film wearing T-shirts that say undocumented and unashamed. And that's sort of an interesting generational difference that these young people who were brought here as children sort of feel, and many people would agree rightly so, that they're not responsible for being here without documentation and they shouldn't have to sort of crouch in the shadows.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, many of the blocks, many of the state bans that, like we're seeing in Georgia, have had the reverse effect in some ways. They've really politicized a generation of students, and projects have sprung up as a result of this. You know, for instance, in Gustavo's story, there's this really fascinating project that was started in Georgia called Freedom University, and that's was started by a group of professors from the University of Georgia who didn't agree with the ban and basically decided to donate their time and without receiving any salary. Every weekend they get together and they teach a group of students who've been banned from the university 4 hours, once a week. They teach them college-level courses to prepare students academically and also to help them in their application process as they seek to attend university. So I think, you know, what you're seeing is as these bans are being enforced in different parts of the country, we're also seeing some very interesting and creative responses to that reality.
My guest is filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz. His new documentary, The Graduates, Los Graduados, is an independent lens two-part special that will air on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13, on Monday, October 29th, and then part two on Monday, November 4th. If you'd like to join the conversation, call us. The number is 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. With more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses, smu.edu/CAPE.
When I was in high school, I never thought about dropping out. I knew from the get-go that was not an option. My mom always pushed us to pursue an education, but I did feel depressed, and I did feel alone, and I did feel really frustrated because I didn't know how I was going to pay for it. I had all these good grades, right, and I was involved in my community since I was like 15 or 16, and to have all this work thrown back in your face, it's really difficult. My senior year, I was president of a club, and so I have all these responsibilities in school, but then behind closed doors, I'm like crying myself to sleep, and I don't know how I'm going to pay for college. I always knew that I was undocumented. My mom always told me, no tenemos papeles, we don't have papers, and I saw her work all these different jobs, from construction work to bartending, but it impacted me when I got to high school. That's when I realized that I was the same as her and that I was different from my friends, because I figured I'm being raised here, I'm learning the language, I'm going to school here, things are going to be different for me, but they weren't.
That is Angie, a young woman featured in the new documentary, The Graduates, Los Graduados. It's an independent lens, two-part film, airing on PBS stations around the country this coming Monday, October 29th, and then the following Monday, November 4th, at 9 o'clock. We're speaking this hour with the filmmaker, Bernardo Ruiz. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Another theme, Bernardo, that comes through this film is the idea that a lot of these students, and you mentioned this earlier, feel responsibilities to their families. And you have a great story here about a woman, a young woman named Chastity, who has been sort of chronically homeless. And despite her young age, feels an extraordinary pull not only to do well in school, but also to help care for her mother and her brothers.
Yeah, that Chastity story is definitely one that stood out to us. I really worked with a wonderful team of producers, and Pamela Aguilar, one of the series producers, and Katia McGuire worked really carefully on that, on Chastity's story. You know, so much of documentary filmmaking is about timing and finding the right time to speak to someone and have them open up. And certainly most of us in our teen years are not able to articulate the challenges we're facing, to be vulnerable, certainly with cameras around. And we were all just so blown away by how Chastity was able to articulate the context that she was in, living in shelters with her family, while at the same time having dreams and certainly an ability. She's a terrific writer. That's one of the things you see in the film. But for a long period in her senior year, she was certainly thinking about not finishing school, not attending college, though she was capable academically, simply because of that pressure, of that economic pressure, and also that responsibility that she'd really absorbed. That it was her job to take care of her younger siblings. It was her responsibility that by leaving, going off college, she'd be leaving the family behind.
Well, let's one of her releases really during this very stressful time was writing. Let's listen here to a poem that she wrote that's in the film.
Childhood drawings, laminated in plastic covering, move, become alive inside her book. Little girl, three little pigs, the clever big bad wolf. She watches the attempts to come near. Developing a silver shield. And they lived in fear because the straw and wood homes never stood up. Now little girl builds a home of bricks just in case. Now the big bad wolf asks for forgiveness before it prays. When the neighborhood tries to take a peek inside and pass the bricks, they can't. I won't let them because I covered it in pasty cement, the kind that hardens when the questions rise. Imagine if they got a chance to look inside. So if anyone wants to know her story, my story, they cannot judge the pain within.
That is Chastity, a young woman featured in the new film, The Graduates, Los Graduados. You know, it's such a beautiful piece of work. And you see her during the scene that she's reading this to her class being just encouraged by her teacher. For Chastity, ironically, school becomes almost a way of escaping all the other hardships in her life.
Yeah, that is you know, that's a it's a really insightful observation. It's something that many students who come from economically disadvantaged circumstances tell us. One of the things that Chastity told us in the beginning is, you know, I would linger at school. She would say I didn't want to go home because I you know, felt ashamed. So I think that was, you know, one of the nice things about working on a project like this is that we're able to hear from Latino youth directly. You know, there's so many theories out there and projects that deal with themes of education and certainly public education. And we know that every year there are debates and discussions about, you know, what possible remedies are to strengthen or change our public education system. And many of these projects feature talking head experts who tell us in an authoritative way what to think one way or the other. What I wanted to do, what we tried to do in this series, is to create a platform for the students themselves to tell us in their own words about the challenges they've faced and what projects or programs or teachers or district policies have actually helped them not just take tests well, but actually get to graduation day and think about and plan for their futures. So, you know, Chastity is someone who is really able to talk to us in a really surprising and frank way. And she and the other students are really part of that effort, really, to be able to hear their voices directly.
And the kind of help that can connect these students to their own potential for success is sort of an ongoing thing. There's at one point in the film, a counselor or an advisor says it's not just about getting them into a school and then sort of dropping them at the doorstep. It's a process.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And we spent about a year and a half to 2 years in production. And I think one of the things that educators, and this is from across the country, whether it was Oklahoma or Georgia or Illinois, one of the things that educators would tell me is that, you know, every year there seems to be a new trend in education. People always want a silver bullet. They always want a kind of, you know, magic formula that's going to fix the dropout rate. You know, what's going to keep students engaged? And, you know, these projects work to varying degrees of success. But what the common thread that I found in the successful programs is that it's not about some trendy solution. It's really just about full engagement and hard work. It's really about working with students in a comprehensive and holistic way, and really looking at trying to find what are the areas that the student is interested in, and what can we do to really work with this student. Again, this, you know, working with students in this way doesn't just benefit the individual student, it benefits the community as a whole. So, you know, projects like Reality Changers in San Diego or the Children's Aid Society in the Bronx that are doing this type of full, big-picture work, we're really seeing successful outcomes out of these programs.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Pete in Arlington. Hi, Pete.
Hi, Chris. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Very important subject, I think. Just as a point of reference, so you'll understand where I'm coming from with my question and comment, I'm a 72-year-old Anglo. In my last 10 years of pre-retirement, before going into full retirement, I worked alongside many Hispanics, and they range in age probably from mid-20s on up into 40s, 50s, and near retirement themselves. Observation, strong work ethic, strong family ethic. Where they weren't so strong was on the education ethic. Your guest, I think, has sort of addressed that already, but how do you take that strong work ethic? Is work ethic and education ethic substitutable? How do you take that strong work ethic and turn that in, or add on to that a strong education ethic? And I'll take the answer off the air.
Thanks for your call. What do you think, Bernardo?
Thank you, Pete, so much for that question. And it's always really interesting to hear from folks in retirement, especially because the issue of educating Latino students is critical for those folks in retirement. when we're thinking about the new generation of workers that are going to contribute to pensions and to retirement funds, it's going to be this new generation of Latino workers, even healthcare workers, et cetera. So it's really an important issue. You know, to the point about creating a stronger educational ethic for this group of students, I think one of the things that we always need to do is separate economic reality and culture. And I think that many of the young immigrants and immigrant families that come to this country are coming here out of economic necessity. So oftentimes families need to work. That is the priority, parents and students. Oftentimes if you're a parent, you don't have the time to check over. If your parent is working, you don't have time to check over homework. You don't have the resources to hire a tutor. So you're really caught between a rock and a hard place in that instance. And I think that's where a community project such as Reality Changers in California or Free University in Georgia, that's where they come in. It's how we give students a boost up so that they can then continue their educations and have the resources they need to attend university. But it's a great question, and I really think that, again, there's no one silver bullet solution, but what we can do is create greater community support. And I think part of what this project is really about is just creating greater awareness in the broader community in the country about the challenges facing this population.
It seems like empowerment is part of this formula, too, the sense that the effort you're putting into education will pay off. And I think it's Stephanie who's involved in a program at her school that sort of gives students some power within the school. And it seems like maybe that's something that is lacking in some situations, this idea that students can feel that what they're working for in school is indeed going to matter.
I think that's a really important point. And in the case of Stephanie Alvarado's story, a young woman from Chicago who was in a district that had implemented a zero-tolerance policy. And a zero-tolerance policy is basically one where for a variety of reasons, namely often street crime, the schools are in a position where they have a very, very firm line about minor infractions. Suspension, sometimes expulsions. As an alternative to that zero-tolerance policy, Stephanie's high school in Chicago had incubated this project, which was a peer jury project. And the peer juries are essentially ways to mediate the stress or tension created by some minor infraction that a student has done. It's a jury of students' peers who decide on a punishment for a student who may have gotten into a fight, who may have written some graffiti on a wall, may have done something that all teens do wherever they are. So this process of having students talk out the problem themselves, take responsibility, and having to make a decision as a group it does two things. One is students tend to respect their peers in a different way than they respect their teachers and administrators, and it also provides leadership training. It's also an opportunity for students to step up to the plate and take responsibility. And one of the things that, again, that I saw in the series, in producing the series, was that across the board, those projects that engage students on that youth leadership level, when students are really asked to take responsibility, more often than not, they're rising to that challenge and becoming more responsible, which, again, is something that benefits not just the Latino community, but, you know, the country as a whole.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Ramon in Dallas. Hi, Ramon.
Hello, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I wanted to make a comment. I'm up in age, and my folks were undocumented, and I was born in downtown Dallas in that worst part of the barrio. I encountered the same problems. It didn't make any difference as to, and I'm light-skinned, and of course the Mexican people didn't like me because I wasn't dark or whatever, but I've run into terrible, terrible problems being Hispanic, and then, you know, being light-skinned is even a worse problem because In school, we had the same problem. In fact, I'm going to name the school North Dallas High School. When I was a sophomore, I was called in by the people that tell you what to take and all that, and said, well, you have to take English and you have to take this, and then this is the same exact words that came out of her mouth. You Mexicans are too stupid to go past general math. So I quickly went to downtown school where they're mostly Hispanics, Crozier Tech, and I ended up with 5 years of math, and I did go on to college. There were six kids, and we were poor, but our parents didn't have any education, but all six of us went to college. We have lawyers, we have doctors, we have CPAs, but the thing about it is, being a Hispanic name, even in the Navy, and even today, I get stopped by police, and they think that I'm Anglo. As soon as they see my driver's license, they back up and say, get out of the truck.
Well, you brought up a lot there, and I really appreciate your call, Ramon. Is there anything that, in all of that that you'd like to comment on, Bernardo?
Well, I think, Ramon, that's such a, first of all, it's a really powerful story. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, your experience is something that many, many people across the country have faced. So I want to thank you, first of all, for sharing that story. And I do think that, your experience is one that's mirrored in the stories we include in the graduates in our series. I do think that the level of expectation sometimes for Latino students, the stereotyping, the limiting of student possibility, that is most definitely a reality. And part of what this project is, part of what we'd like to be a part of is an effort to change perceptions about Latino youth. It's such a broad and diverse community, whether we're talking about geography, ethnicity and race, socioeconomic status. Latinos are a very diverse group of people, and we can't paint this community with one brush. So part of what we're trying to do in this series is showcase that diversity, highlight the diversity, and then have students speak in their own words, tell us what the experiences have been like. And much in the same way Amon has told us.
Let me jump in. We have to take a quick break. My guest is filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz. We're talking about the documentary The Graduates, Los Graduados, back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. With more than 40 classes starting in October, from landscape painting to intelligent investing on the Dallas and Plano campuses, smu.edu/CAPE.
My mother's message to her children, four of us, me being the second youngest, was your dignity above everything else, is more important than anything you'll ever do. And education is going to help you create that dignity. My mother felt that she could do better on the American side as a single parent than had she stayed in Mexico. I've always said to myself, when I'm reporting on some of these stories, there but for the grace of God go I. Because I see myself and I see my mother repeatedly, over and over again, even in the most dismal settings of parents who've made a decision, who will sacrifice and will not stop at anything to make sure that their kids succeed.
If that voice sounds familiar, it is because it's NPR's education correspondent, Claudia Sanchez, who is featured in the new film for Independent Lens. It's a two-part film called The Graduates, Los Graduados. It will air on PBS stations, including KERA Channel 13, on Monday, October 28th. I got that date wrong before. Monday, October 28th and Monday, November 4th, both times at 9 p.m. We have with us the filmmaker, Bernardo Ruiz, to talk about the project. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Talk about, Bernardo, how you found the students that you profiled in the film and why you also felt it was important to have adults sort of on the other side of things to sort of give an example of stories of success that have already taken place.
You know, I really appreciate that observation that you know, the adults are are kind of on the sidelines, and we're really allowing the students themselves to tell the stories. They're the drivers of the narrative in this project. I wish I'd had a magic formula. I wish I'd had a perfect approach to how to cast students, but so much of documentary production is about, again, it's about being in the right place at the right time. I worked with a number of different organizations. We did research in a number of different locations. Obviously, geographic diversity was really important to us. We wanted to tell stories in both urban and rural settings. Frequently, we found many schools in districts were understandably reticent or weary about having camera crews in their hallways or in their classrooms. I think it certainly was a challenge to explain what we wanted to do to kind of build trust. But once we did that, we really did have wonderful access in districts from Lawrence, Massachusetts, to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to San Diego, to Griffin, et cetera. We were really able to spend some time in schools and communities. But ultimately, I think it was really the mentors and guidance counselors that helped me and my team find students who would be willing to share their stories with us. And again, it's no small task to open up in front of a camera crew, to forget that they're there and go about your life. Certainly when you're doing the style of production that we do, you know, we're not a reality crew. We're not forcing things. We're there. We're quietly observing, and we're listening. If we're doing our job well, we're listening. That type of production is doesn't happen quickly, and you do need students who are able to verbally express the challenges that they're facing.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Andrew in Dallas. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I just retired from working with Dallas Public Schools for 22 years as a community liaison. And I worked in primary Oak Cliff with primary immigrant children, both documented and undocumented. Mm-hmm. I worked back in the early 90s, late 80s, when we had the people who were here from the Reagan administration with their program, the MSD program that they had. And what I found almost unanimously was that one of the reasons the parents come here, contrary to what the caller said a few calls ago, that the parents come with a strong work ethic, but they also come because their child could be afforded an education in this country free of charge. Because in many places in Mexico, you have to pay for your education, you have to pay for your books. And if you come from a rancho, then sometimes, you know, it goes up to a third grade education, you have to be bused 30 miles to get an education. So it's a misconception, I think, that when people think that parents of immigrants keep their children from going to school so they can work and hate to pay the bills, it's just the opposite. Parents of immigrants' children will work two jobs 7 days a week to make sure their child could get an education. And because of that, sometimes children will be children no matter where you are in the country. A child's a child. And in many instances, they're able to pull the wool over their parents' eyes because their parents don't understand our school systems.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for those observations and for your call. I really appreciate it. And that, Bernardo, sort of links back to something that happened with Eduardo. His father was really busy working, wanted his kids in school, and then later sort of regretted that he wasn't always around as much as he might have been.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I also just really appreciated Andrew's comments. That is a story that happens with Eduardo Corona, whose parents came from Mexico. Mr. Corona was busy working, trying to put food on the table, and was absent. And out of that absence comes danger. And Eduardo joins a gang, gets involved in criminal activity. At one point, is even facing a six-year sentence. And if not for the intervention of this project, Reality Changers, Eduardo would have most likely have done some time. But it's not just the Mexican-American students. We also see in the case of Juan Bernabe, who's a Dominican student in the city of Lawrence, Massachusetts, he also had a mother who came from the Dominican Republic. In her case, in a kind of unusual story, she had actually been trained as an agronomist. She had a career, a professional career in the Dominican Republic, but even with that career, she felt like coming to the U.S., coming to the Northeast, would give her son a leg up. And so that's why she migrated to the snowy city of Lawrence, Massachusetts, so that her son could have a very strong education.
And it was a challenge for him on a number of fronts, including socially, he had a hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. In the case of Juan, he's a student who comes out of the closet. Imagine as a sophomore in high school, coming out of the closet in a very tough school in Lawrence, Mass. It's a former mill town. In the case of Juan, what helped him get through that very difficult period was a very active arts program and theater program. Having that community of support in that case is what got him going. He's now he's entering his first year in college, and will be studying science. So, you know, we all have these very interesting paths, but in each one of these stories, we see that there is one organization, one group that has stepped in to create a support that helps the students get not only to the finish line, but often to college as well.
And in that diversity of organizations that you sort of include in the film in telling these student stories, it becomes apparent once again that there is not a silver bullet. There are lots of approaches that can work, and it just really is sort of a matter of getting the right student matched with the right services if that student needs help.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of liken it to flossing or doing the dishes. You know, it's the unglamorous work that we all need to do every day. And there's that day in, day out work that doesn't get attention. But across the board, in every district that we filmed in, the programs that had success, it was basically because you had a committed group of guidance counselors or teachers or a district administrator who was willing to try a new program, or the head of a nonprofit that was committed to the full student and really working in a full way. You know, it wasn't about the latest trend in education or, you know, the latest idea from D.C. It was really about being committed to your community. And I think that's something we see across the country. Those programs that really foster success are the ones that think about the student as a whole, full person in the ways that we would all like to be perceived and supported.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next on the phone with Stephanie in Dallas. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. I just had a bit of a comment to make. I know a few of the others kind of touched upon it a bit about the importance of how a lot of families come here because of the better future really they'll get, not just work ethic, not just it's a better life for their children. And like my parents, you know, they came here, they had five girls, and all of us were lucky enough to be citizens here. And when, you know, education was always very important for them, and they were able to throw these girls out into a society where they would be able to contribute and be productive citizens. So I just think that's a very good point that a lot of people tend to miss.
Yeah, Stephanie, thank you so much for your call.
That's such a great point, Stephanie. And I think that when I hear the stories of all of the callers, it makes me want to go and interview everybody. You have there's such a richness of story out there. There's so many diverse stories in terms of people's experience. But I think what we see is that the stories of these students in the series and the graduates, they really touch a chord, and they touch a chord because they're emblematic of the experiences of so many people whose families have come to the United States, migrated here, started a new life here. Even my story is a parallel one. And I came to the U.S. as a 6-year-old. I was actually born in central Mexico to an American mother, Mexican father, came to the United States, came to New York, struggled with language in the very beginning, and eventually found my passion in journalism and documentary. In my case, it was actually a high school program for teen journalists that kind of got me on track. I had been a very uneven student up until that point. But I think what we see in the series is that it's really about these committed teachers and these projects that help students find what it is that they're passionate about. And it's that passion that leads to academic success, no question.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, the difference between the students that you profile in this film, all of whom are really just amazing young people and seem destined for success and to do good things, the difference between them and the ones who slip up and remain out of school or, you know, for whatever reason are not able to finish and go on to more education.
You know, I think one of the things that was interesting about this group is that had there not been the support of a community organization or a dedicated teacher, these students very likely could have dropped out or ended up in jail or you know, gone down a different path. I think in some ways the students seem extraordinary because of their ability to talk about their experiences, but they're not necessarily special or unique in the sense that their stories really are emblematic of so many different types of stories. But there certainly are students who've fallen through the cracks, and I think that's the challenge going forward is what kinds of supports can we create for those students who've been neglected or overlooked by districts? How can we get those students involved? I mean, again, this is not just a Latino issue. This is a national issue.
Is there... Oh, continue, please. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just running on.
Oh, not at all. But I was going to ask, is there a growing sense within the Latino community that it's important for those who do succeed to sort of turn around and reach a handout to the next generation coming up?
I think no question. And it's something you see in Eduardo Corona's story. He's now a youth mentor. When I was filming him in San Diego, I always had the sense that he was kind of like a shepherd. You know, he's always corralling students, and there were always a gaggle of kids around him. You know, he's a model now. He's someone who comes from the exact same neighborhood as this group of students, has gone through many of the same challenges that they faced, but is now on the other side of that tightrope and is achieving academic success and getting recognition from his community. So I definitely think that there is... I think in the coming years, we're going to see more and more youth leaders, Latino and Latina youth leaders, step up to the plate. And, you know, the good news in general is that the dropout rate is actually falling. Mm-hmm. College enrollment for Latino students they're actually going up.
Well, we'll have to leave it there because we're out of time.
But challenges.
That's a great place to leave it. The new film by filmmaker Bernardo Ruiz is called The Graduates, Los Graduados. It airs October 28th and November 4th. Bernardo was with us as part of the American Graduate Initiative. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is assistant producer. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.